Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. You may not realize it when you see Ken Shells wielding his chainsaw at carving competitions, but he thinks deeply about trees. Emily Bright got a tour of Shells' workshop and a glimpse into his mind as he sets about his carving.
When I grab my saw, I'm ready to carve. I'm hungry. I want to make some sawdust, you know, and I'm looking forward to it.
Ken Shells may not look like a poet when he's hauling trees to a sawmill or wielding his chainsaw at carving competitions, but he thinks deeply about trees. Dressed in plaid flannel and a cap, Ken shows me an 11-foot conference table which he cut from a local century-old tree. He points out small dark marks on the tabletop.
So there was metal in every cut. Somebody hung a sign. You know, there was a party. They hung a balloon in it.
Nails in a tree, permanent marks in the wood. Trees will tell you a story. That's what Ken, like his late father Carl Shells, loves the most.
My folks were married in 1939 here with $10 in their pocket. They went out to the Nicolay National Forest, squatted on government land, and lived there for 8 years without water or electricity. My dad was an outlaw beaver trapper. So they've been pioneers, and I am very proud of where we come from because I think it makes you who you are.
His family was living back in town by the time Ken was born, but their living always came from nature. Ken started carving to make gifts for his father, and it soon became a business.
I would probably describe myself as a craftsman. How about a craftsman with a big imagination?
Sometimes that imagination leads to metal art as well as woodwork. Like a dragon, welded from washers that actually breathes fire over the shop door. Inside the tall open workshop, several projects are going, like a whimsical hobbit house as big as a one-room cabin. Ken's nephew, Robert Shells, is welding old farm implements to make the face of a 3-foot metal frog.
How many washers in the frog, Rob?
About 815.
About 815 washers are welded together. And this Psy, that's going to be his tongue like that. This Psy will even tell you a story if you pay attention to it. It's very wore down.
The creativity around the shop is supported by a great deal of work and planning. 2 semi-loads of wood take up a good third of the space, drying for at least 4 years before Ken works with them.
That wood has a lot of power. You're asking the cells to change very quickly if you open the grain up, so you want it to move slowly if you can.
Ken admits planning new projects will keep him up at night so that he and his 2 employees don't waste a minute during the day. At age 60, he has no plans to stop, but he admits the work is physically challenging.
A lot of stuff is, you know, hundreds and thousands of pounds. We don't hardly do anything small. So I can tell the difference, you know, when I was, you know, 10 years younger.
There's always something waiting to be built. Another tree ready to tell a story if only you look close enough. Because if there's one thing Ken has learned, it's that the true craftsman is nature. He gestures to an end table whose hollow, gnarled base he'd stayed for 25 years looking for the right project.
I mean, that is a good example of nature's work there. I mean, you can see all the wrinkles in it and you know, all of the design. It's just, it's a beautiful piece of wood.
All the carver does, Ken says, is remove the parts he doesn't want so you can see the rest.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
Well, every summer, lumberjacks and lumberjills from all over the world flock to Hayward, Wisconsin to compete in the Lumberjack World Champions.
Joining us now to tell us about the history of the competition is Lou Friedman. He's the author of Timber, the story of the Lumberjack World Championships. Lou, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having us. Having me here live from, we used to live in Central Time not too long ago, but I'm in Rocky Mountain Time right now where I think we have just as many trees but fewer chainsaws.
Ah.
Well, can you tell us a story about the beginning of the competition?
Well, my story in it is that I watched for years on television and always dreamed of having the opportunity to go to Hayward, Wisconsin and attend the Lumberjack World Championships. And in the early 2000s, I became the outdoor writer for the Chicago Tribune and convinced them that that was an event they had to go to. And I loved it. It was a blast. The people were always great. I love the vernacular sometimes where the sawers talk about just making sawdust, you know, they just... They like to see that those chips fly, and it's they do wear ear protection. It's sort of like being in a shooting sport, I guess, in terms of what it does to your ears. But I met some great people early on. There's some people who get it in their blood and always come back.
And what did you see that first year? Did you come away seeing some amazing things that stuck with you?
Amazing things is true. I mean, and the story behind the origin of the games is pretty, involves a visionary in Tony Weiss, who began things in 1960 and really thought it could be a special event and dreamed of it being a worldwide phenomenon. But the one athlete who made the biggest impression on me early on was a fellow named Jason Wynyard, who has just been a dominant athlete for more than a decade in all of the events that involve strength. But one of my, and I've been a sports writer for most of my adult life, but the most inspirational athlete I think I've ever covered in any sport is from the Lumberjack World Championships.
Now, when this started, were the people in it real lumberjacks, or were they athletes who liked to do lumberjack kind of stuff?
I think there was a little of both, and they got into the overlap. You know, they started, there were more professionals who were in jobs, made their living in that world, and they became more focused as athletes.
Hmm.
And what events are we talking about?
The heavyweights do the power sawing things, you know, the sawing competitions, the lighter weight people do log rolling, and the way they can balance on logs as they're spinning is breathtaking to watch to keep themselves from falling into the water. And then there's the people who climb poles who, you know, emulate what it was like to climb trees and trim them at the top.
Now the sawing thing, is that where they have one of those big honking saws and one person's on one side and the other person's on the other side?
Yeah, and they have just the aptly named mixed doubles there with Jack and Jill sawing.
Oh, really?
One man, one woman.
And has that been happening the whole time, or was that something that started more recently?
I'm not sure it was from the very beginning, but a few events have been added over time, and all of the ones that are contested now have been around for a long time.
Now, it sounds like at some point this event landed on ABC's Wide World of Sports. Did that change thing when it kind of hit the big time?
That's the thing that interests me. I was living in the East Coast at the time. That's what grabbed me. I was when I first introduced it to me, and I believe they built a tremendous following from that. So they do have great attendance in the small town of Hayward every year in July. But it's not on that anymore. You know, they don't get that same television hit nationwide. I'm sure there's different kinds of television in regional groups that show things, but that helped build the popularity.
Now, you mentioned some past legends, but are there other like, you know, memorable legends? Is there like a Paul Bunyan of the contest or anything? Or
Paul Bunyan, I think, is the overall symbol of it. But there's a fellow named J.R. Salzman, who was a soldier in Desert Storm, who was a star in the log rolling before he left, and was a casualty of war with his wounds, lost an arm, was in an explosion, and then came back and tried to compete right away. He rushed his comeback. But then a year after that, and this is probably around 2007 or 8, I'm trying to remember the exact year, he won another world title, and he's won 9 world titles. And so he's a guy who really made a comeback after suffering war wounds, fighting for his country. And he's one of the most inspirational athletes I've ever been around.
Lou, did you ever try your hand at any of these events, see how hard it was?
I could tell how. I had too much respect for those events to do them. I don't have that kind of balance. I'm an old guy, and I surely didn't have the kind of body and build that it took to saw quickly. So that would be those football linemen fit in very well with that, and I'm a much smaller guy. I used to be a cross-country runner.
Well, Lou, thanks a lot for joining us today and telling us about it.
Well, it's right down the street from you. So I'm sure that many of your listeners have been there, and I'm sure they enjoy it.
Terrific. Well, we were talking with Lou Friedman, the author of Timber, the story of the Lumberjack World Championships happening, as Lou says, in Hayward, Wisconsin. I'm not too-